Chapter 4, Part 1. Papal Persecutions. Thus far, our history of persecution has been confined principally to the pagan world. We come now to a period when persecution, under the guise of Christianity, committed more enormities than ever disgraced the annals of paganism. Disregarding the maxims and the spirit of the gospel, the papal church, arming herself with the power of the sword, vexed the Church of God and wasted it for several centuries, a period most appropriately termed in history, the Dark Ages. The kings of the earth gave their power to the beast, and submitted to be trodden on by the miserable vermin that often filled the papal chair, as in the case of Henry, Emperor of Germany. The storm of papal persecution first burst upon the Waldenses in France. Persecution of the Waldenses in France. Popery, having brought various innovations into the church, and overspread the Christian world with darkness and superstition, some few, who plainly perceived the pernicious tendency of such errors, determined to show the light of the gospel in its real purity, and to disperse those clouds which artful priests had raised about it, in order to blind the people and obscure its real brightness. The principal among these was Berengarius, who, about the year 1000, boldly preached gospel truths, according to their primitive purity. Many, from conviction, assented to his doctrine, and were, on that account, called Berengarians. To Berengarius succeeded Pierre Bruys, who preached at Toulouse, under the protection of an earl named Hildelfonsus, and the whole tenets of the reformers, with the reasons of their separation from the Church of Rome, were published in a book written by Bruys under the title of Antichrist. By the year of Christ 1140, the number of the Reformed was very great, and the probability of its increasing alarmed the Pope, who wrote to several princes to banish them from their dominions, and employed many learned men to write against their doctrines. In A.D. 1147, because of Henry of Toulouse, deemed their most eminent preacher, they were called Henercians. And as they would not admit of any proofs relative to religion, but what could be deduced from the scriptures themselves, the popish party gave them the name of Apostolics. At length, Peter Waldo, or Valdo, a native of Lyon, eminent for his piety and learning, became a strenuous opposer of popery. And from him the Reformed, at that time, received the appellation of Waldenses, or Waldois. Pope Alexander III, being informed by the Bishop of Lyon of these transactions, excommunicated Waldo and his adherents, and commanded the bishop to exterminate them, if possible, from the face of the earth. Hence began the papal persecutions against the Waldenses. The proceedings of Waldo and the Reformed occasioned the first rise of the inquisitors, for Pope Innocent III authorized certain monks as inquisitors to inquire for and deliver over the Reformed to the secular power. The process was short, as an accusation was deemed adequate to guilt, and a candid trial was never granted to the accused. The Pope, finding that these cruel means had not the intended effect, sent several learned monks to preach among the Waldenses, and to endeavor to argue them out of their opinions. Among these monks was one Dominic, who appeared extremely zealous in the cause of popery. This Dominic instituted an order, which, from him, was called the Order of Dominican Friars, and the members of this order have ever since been the principal inquisitors in the various inquisitions in the world. The power of the inquisitors was unlimited. They proceeded against whom they pleased, without any consideration of age, sex, or rank. Let the accusers be ever so infamous, the accusation was deemed valid, and even anonymous informations sent by letter were thought sufficient evidence. To be rich was a crime equal to heresy. Therefore, many who had money were accused of heresy, or of being favorers of heretics, that they might be obliged to pay for their opinions. The dearest friends or nearest kindred could not, without danger, serve anyone who was imprisoned on account of religion. to convey to those who were confined a little straw, or give them a cup of water, was called favoring of the heretics, and they were prosecuted accordingly. No lawyer dared to plead for his own brother, and their malice even extended beyond the grave. Hence the bones of many were dug up and burnt as examples to the living. If a man on his deathbed was accused of being a follower of Waldo, his estates were confiscated, and the heir to them defrauded of his inheritance, and some were sent to the Holy Land, while the Dominicans took possession of their houses and properties, and, when the owners returned, would often pretend not to know them. These persecutions were continued for several centuries under different popes and other great dignitaries of the Catholic Church. Persecutions of the Albigenses. The Albigenses were a people of the Reformed religion who inhabited the country of Albi. They were condemned on the score of religion in the Council of Lateran by order of Pope Alexander III. Nevertheless, they increased so prodigiously that many cities were inhabited by persons only of their persuasion, and several eminent noblemen embraced their doctrines. Among the latter were Raymond, Earl of Toulouse, Raymond, Earl of Foix, the Earl of Beziers, etc. A friar named Peter, having been murdered in the dominions of the Earl of Toulouse, the Pope made the murder a pretense to persecute that nobleman and his subjects. To effect this, he sent persons throughout all Europe in order to raise forces to act coercively against the Albigenses, and promised paradise to all that would come to this war, which he termed a holy war, and bear arms for 40 days. The same indulgences were likewise held out to all who entered themselves for the purpose as to such as engaged in crusades to the Holy Land. The brave earl defended Toulouse and other places with the most heroic bravery and various success against the Pope's legates and Simon, Earl of Montfort, a bigoted Catholic nobleman. Unable to subdue the Earl of Toulouse openly, the King of France and the Queen Mother and three archbishops raised another formidable army and had the art to persuade the Earl of Toulouse to come to a conference, when he was treacherously seized upon, made a prisoner, forced to appear barefooted and bareheaded before his enemies, and compelled to subscribe an abject recantation. This was followed by a severe persecution against the Albigenses, and express orders that the laity should not be permitted to read the sacred scriptures. In the year 1620 also, the persecution against the Albigenses was very severe. In 1648, a heavy persecution raged throughout Lithuania and Poland. The cruelty of the Cossacks was so excessive that the Tartans themselves were ashamed of their barbarities. Among others who suffered was the Reverend Adrian Chelinski, who was roasted alive by a slow fire, and whose sufferings and mode of death may depict the horrors which the professors of Christianity have endured from the enemies of the Redeemer. The reformation of papistical error very early was projected in France. For in the 3rd century, a learned man named Almericus and 6 of his disciples were ordered to be burnt at Paris for asserting that God was no otherwise present in the sacramental bread than in any other bread, that it was idolatry to build altars or shrines to saints, and that it was ridiculous to offer incense to them. The martyrdom of Almericus and his pupils did not, however, prevent many from acknowledging the justness of his notions and seeing the purity of the Reformed religion, so that the faith of Christ continually increased, and in time not only spread itself over many parts of France, but diffused the light of the gospel over various other countries. In the year 1524, at a town in France called Meldon, one John Clark set up a bill on the church door, wherein he called the Pope Antichrist. For this offense, he was repeatedly whipped and then branded on the forehead. Going afterward to Mentz in Lorraine, he demolished some images for which he had his right hand and nose cut off, and his arms and breast torn with pincers. He sustained these cruelties with amazing fortitude, and was even sufficiently cool to sing the 115th Psalm, which expressly forbids idolatry, after which he was thrown into the fire and burnt to ashes. Many persons of the Reformed persuasion were, about this time, beaten,
racked, scourged, and burnt to death in several parts of France, but more particularly at Paris, Malta, and Limousin. A native of Malta was burnt by a slow fire for saying that Mass was a plain denial of the death and passion of Christ. At Limousin, John de Cadurco, a clergyman of the Reformed religion, was apprehended and ordered to be burnt. Francis Brevard, secretary to Cardinal de Palais, for speaking in favor of the Reformed, had his tongue cut out, and was then burnt, A.D. 1545. James Cobard, a schoolmaster in the city of St. Michael, was burnt, A.D. 1545, for saying that, quote, the Mass was useless and absurd. At about the same time, 14 men were burnt at Malta, their wives being compelled to stand by and behold the execution. A.D. 1546, Peter Chapot brought a number of Bibles in the French tongue to France and publicly sold them there, for which he was brought to trial, sentenced, and executed a few days afterwards. Soon after, a cripple of Meaux, a schoolmaster of Ferrat named Stephen Paulot, and a man named John English were burnt for the faith. Monsieur Blondel, a rich jeweler, was, in A.D. 1548, apprehended at Lyons and sent to Paris. There he was burnt for the faith by order of the court, A.D. 1549. Herbert, a youth of 19 years of age, was committed to the flames at Dijon, as was also Florent Venot in the same year. In the year 1554, two men of the Reformed religion, with the son and daughter of one of them, were apprehended and committed to the castle of Nivernes. On examination, they confessed their faith and were ordered to execution. Being smeared with grease, brimstone, and gunpowder, they cried, salt on this sinful and rotten flesh. Their tongues were then cut out, and they were afterward committed to the flames, which soon consumed them, by means of the combustible matter with which they were besmeared. The Bartholomew Massacre at Paris, etc. On the 22nd day of August, 1572, commenced this diabolical act of sanguinary brutality. It was intended to destroy at one stroke the root of the Protestant tree, which had only before partially suffered in its branches. The King of France had artfully proposed a marriage between his sister and the Prince of Navarre, the captain and prince of the Protestants. This imprudent marriage was publicly celebrated at Paris, August 18, by the Cardinal of Bourbon, upon a high stage erected for the purpose. They dined in great pomp with the bishop, and supped with the king at Paris. 4 days after this, the prince, Coligny, as he was coming from the council, was shot in both arms. He then said to Mar, his deceased mother's minister, O my brother, I do now perceive that I am indeed beloved of my God, since for his most holy sake I am wounded. Although the vidame advised him to fly, yet he abode in Paris, and was soon after slain by Bemjus, who afterward declared he never saw a man meet death more valiantly than the admiral. The soldiers were appointed at a certain signal to burst out instantly to the slaughter in all parts of the city. When they had killed the admiral, they threw him out at a window in the street, where his head was cut off and sent to the Pope. The savage papists, still raging against him, cut off his arms and private members, and, after dragging him 3 days through the streets, hung him by the heels without the city. After him they slew many great and honorable persons who were Protestants, as Count Rochefoucault, Tolenius, the admiral's son-in-law, Antonius, Clermontus, Marquis of Ravelais, Luce, Bussius, Brandinius, Publius, Brennaeus, etc. And falling upon the common people, they continued the slaughter for many days. In the three first they slew of all ranks and conditions to the number of 10,000. The bodies were thrown into the rivers, and blood ran through the streets with a strong current, and the river appeared presently like a stream of blood. So furious was their hellish rage that they slew all papists whom they suspected to be not very staunch to their diabolical religion. From Paris the destruction spread to all quarters of the realm. At Orleans, 1,000 were slain of men, women, and children, and 6,000 at Rouen. At Meldeth, 200 were put into prison and later brought out by units and cruelly murdered. At Lyons, 800 were massacred. Here, children hanging about their parents and parents affectionately embracing their children were pleasant food for the swords and bloodthirsty minds of those who call themselves the Catholic Church. Here, 300 were slain in the bishop's house, and the impious monks would suffer none to be buried. At Augusta Bonna, on the people hearing of the massacre at Paris, they shut their gates that no Protestants might escape, and searching diligently for every individual of the Reformed Church, imprisoned and then barbarously murdered them. The same cruelty they practiced at Avarcum and Troyes, at Toulouse, Rouen, and many other places, running from city to city, towns and villages through the kingdom. As a corroboration of this horrid carnage, the following interesting narrative, written by a sensible and learned Roman Catholic, appears in this place, with peculiar propriety. "The nuptials," says he, "of the young king of Navarre with the French king's sister was solemnized with pomp, and all the endearments, all the assurances of friendship, all the oaths sacred among men were profusely lavished by Catherine, the queen mother, and by the king, during which the rest of the court thought of nothing but festivities, plays, and masquerades. At last, at 12 o'clock at night, on the eve of St. Bartholomew, the signal was given. Immediately all the houses of the Protestants were forced open at once. Admiral Coligny, alarmed by the uproar, jumped out of bed, when a company of assassins rushed in his chamber. They were headed by one Bessem, who had been bred up as a domestic in the family of the Guises. This wretch thrust his sword into the admiral's breast, and also cut him in the face. Bessem was a German, and being afterwards taken by the Protestants, the Rochelers would have brought him in order to hang and quarter him. But he was killed by one Bretonville. Henry, the young Duke of Guise, who afterwards framed the Catholic League and was murdered at Blois, standing at the door until the horrid butchery should be completed, called aloud, 'Bessem, is it done?' Immediately after this, the ruffians threw the body out of the window, and Coligny expired at Guise's feet. Count de Tilligny also fell a sacrifice. He had married, about 10 months before, Coligny's daughter. His countenance was so engaging that the ruffians, when they advanced in order to kill him, were struck with compassion. But others, more barbarous, rushing forward, murdered him. In the meantime, all the friends of Coligny were assassinated throughout Paris. Men, women, and children were promiscuously slaughtered, and every street was strewed with expiring bodies. Some priests, holding up a crucifix in one hand and a dagger in the other, ran to the chiefs of the murderers and strongly exhorted them to spare neither relations nor friends. Tavannes, Marshal of France, an ignorant, superstitious soldier, who joined the fury of religion to the rage of party, rode on horseback through the streets of Paris, crying to his men, 'Let blood! Let blood! Bleeding is as wholesome in August as in May.' In the memories of the life of this enthusiastic, written by his son, we are told that the father, being on his deathbed, and making a general confession of his actions, the priest said to him with surprise, 'What? No mention of St. Bartholomew's massacre?' To which Tavannes replied, 'I consider it as a meritorious action that will wash away my sins.' Such horrid sentiments can a false spirit of religion inspire." The king's palace was one of the chief scenes of the butchery. The king of Navarre had his lodgings in the Louvre, and all his domestics were Protestants. Many of these were killed in bed with their wives. Others, running away naked, were pursued by the soldiers through the several rooms of the palace, even to the king's antechamber. The young wife of Henry of Navarre, awakened by the dreadful uproar, being afraid for her consort and for her own life, seized with horror and half-dead, flew from her bed in order to throw herself at the feet of the king, her brother. But scarce had she opened her chamber door when some of her Protestant domestics rushed in for refuge. The soldiers immediately followed, pursued them in sight of the princess, and killed one who crept under her bed. two others, being wounded with halberds, fell at the queen's feet, so that she was covered with blood. Count de la Rochefoucauld, a young nobleman, greatly in the king's favor for his comely air, his politeness, and a certain peculiar happiness in the turn of his conversation, had spent the evening until 11 o'clock with the monarch, in pleasant familiarity, and had given a loose, with the utmost mirth, to the sallies of his imagination. The monarch felt some remorse, and being touched with a kind of compassion, bid him, 2 or 3 times, not to go home, but lie in the Louvre. The count said he must go to his wife, upon which the king pressed him no farther, but said, "Let him go. I see God has decreed his death." And in 2 hours after, he was murdered. Very few of the Protestants escaped the fury of their enthusiastic persecutors. Among these was young La Force, afterwards the famous Marshal de La Force, a child about 10 years of age, whose deliverance was exceedingly remarkable. His father, the elder brother, and he himself were seized together by the Duke of Anjou's soldier. These murderers flew at all three, and struck them at random, when they all fell and lay upon one another. The youngest did not receive a single blow, but appearing as if he was dead, escaped the next day, and his life, thus wonderfully preserved, lasted 65 years. Many of the wretched victims fled to the waterside, and some swam over the Seine to the suburbs of Saint-Germain. The king saw them from his window, which looked upon the river, and fired upon them with a carbine that had been loaded for that purpose by one of his pages, while the queen mother, undisturbed and serene in the midst of slaughter, looking down from a balcony, encouraged the murderers and laughed at the dying groans of the slaughtered. This barbarous queen was fired with a restless ambition, and she perpetually shifted her party in order to satiate it. Some days after this horrid transaction, the French court endeavored to palliate it by forms of law. They pretended to justify the massacre by a calumny, and accused the admiral of a conspiracy, which no one believed. The Parliament was commended to proceed against the memory of Coligny, and his dead body was hanged in chains on Montfaucon gallows. The king himself went to view this shocking spectacle. So one of his courtiers advised him to retire, and complaining of the stench of the corpse, he replied, "A dead enemy smells well." The massacres on St. Bartholomew's Day are painted in the Royal Salon of the Vatican at Rome with the following inscription, "Pontifex Coligny Necem Probet," i.e., the Pope approves of Coligny's death. The young king of Navarre was spared through policy, rather than from pity of the queen mother, she keeping him prisoner until the king's death, in order that he might be as a security and pledge for the submission of such Protestants as might effect their escape. This horrid butchery was not confined merely to the city of Paris. The like orders were issued from court to the governors of all the provinces in France, so that, in a week's time, about 100,000 Protestants were cut to pieces in different parts of the kingdom. 2 or 3 governors only refused to obey the king's orders. One of these, named Montmorin, governor of Auvergne, wrote the king the following letter, which deserves to be transmitted to the latest posterity. "Sire, I have received an order, under your majesty's seal, to put to death all the Protestants in my province. I have too much respect for your majesty not to believe the letter a forgery. But if, which God forbid, the order should be genuine, I have too much respect for your majesty to obey it." At Rome, the horrid joy was so great that they appointed a day of high festival and a jubilee, with great indulgence to all who kept it, and showed every expression of gladness they could devise. And the man who first carried the news received 1,000 crowns of the Cardinal of Lorraine for his ungodly message. The king also commanded the day to be kept with every demonstration of joy, concluding now that the whole race of Huguenots was extinct. Many who gave great sums of money for their ransom were immediately after slain, and several towns, which were under the king's promise of protection and safety, were cut off as soon as they delivered themselves up. On these promises, to his generals or captains. At Bordeaux, at the instigation of a villainous monk, who used to urge the papists to slaughter in his sermons, 264 were cruelly murdered, some of them senators. Another of the same pious fraternity produced a similar slaughter at Angenicum, in Maine, where the populace at the Holy Inquisitor's satanical suggestion ran upon the Protestants, slew them, plundered their houses, and pulled down their church. The Duke of Guise, entered into Blois, suffered his soldiers to fly upon the spoil, and slay or drown all the Protestants they could find. In this they spared neither age nor sex, defiling the women and then murdering them. From whence he went to Mer, and committed the same outrages for many days together. Here they found a minister named Cassibonius, and threw him into the river. At Anjou they slew Albiacus, a minister, and many women were defiled and murdered there, among whom were two sisters, abused before their father, whom the assassins bound to a wall to see them, and then slew them and him. The president of Turin, after giving a large sum for his life, was cruelly beaten with clubs, stripped of his clothes, and hung feet upwards, with his head and breast in the river. Before he was dead, they opened his belly, plucked out his entrails, and threw them into the river, and then carried his heart about the city upon a spear. At Barrée, great cruelty was used, even to young children, whom they cut open, pulled out their entrails, which through very rage they gnawed with their teeth. Those who had fled to the castle, when they yielded, were almost hanged. Thus they did at the city of Masticon, counting it sport to cut off their arms and legs, and afterward kill them. And for the entertainment of their visitors, they often threw the Protestants from a high bridge into the river, saying, "Did you ever see men leap so well?" At Penna, after promising them safety, 300 were inhumanely butchered, and 45 at Albia on the Lord's Day. At Nantes, though it yielded on conditions of safeguard, the most horrid spectacles were exhibited. Persons of both sexes and conditions were indiscriminately murdered, the streets ringing with doleful cries and flowing with blood, and the houses flaming with fire, which the abandoned soldiers had thrown in. One woman, being dragged from her hiding place with her husband, was first abused by the brutal soldiers, and then with a sword which they commanded her to draw, they forced it while in her hands into the bowels of her husband.